Good morning, good evening, wherever you are today. Welcome to episode 23 of the Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from our massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Today we're taking a page from the great Roger Daltrey, and we're going mobile. We're going to talk about mobile devices, mobile development environments, app stores, what's working, what's broken, and really what's important for end users or business to be looking at as we move into 2012. So today we've got a bunch of great guests. This conversation sort of started on Twitter, as a lot of our conversations do, but we've got both Brian Katz, Director of Mobility at Sanofi Pharmaceuticals, and Tal Klein, Director of Technical Marketing from Citrix. Guys, thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Everybody have a good holiday, good Thanksgiving.
I'm still reeling and figuring out how to get one belt loop back into normality.
I can solve that for you. Move houses. You use lots of calories that way.
Yeah, you've been moving all weekend. Everything back to normal? You can find things?
Not even close, but my wife's much more organized than I am. She labeled all the boxes and numbered them.
So, guys, the conversation kind of got started. And the fourth guest we were supposed to have on was Mr. Hare, Christian Riley, was moaning and groaning and complaining about mobile devices, and was sort of, it got started, I think, with the Kindle Fire and kind of the promise of, cool, here's a lower-priced Android type of device, open app store, potentially. You know, he was always looking for, you know, ways to integrate into the enterprise, and then he ran into a lot of the common problems that people are seeing as they move from mobile devices, whether they're tablets or smartphones, and they're trying to integrate them in their business world. You guys obviously are dealing with this a lot. It's been an interesting space. The last 3 or 4 years, the mobile device market has probably changed as radically as any I've ever seen in technology, at least in my 20 years. Would you guys agree with that? Is this, you know, aside from, you know, the kind of the buzz around cloud, is this the most interesting space these days in terms of change and things that are happening?
I think so.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, it's definitely interesting because, you know, it's a lot of people initially described it, you know, as basically the final onslaught of consumerization into the enterprise world, in the sense that IT's last vestige was devices, you know, in that they got to configure whatever it is you had. You got your phone and your computer and all your devices from IT, and that was their stranglehold on you. And I think mobility, you know, officially just destroyed that control mechanism that IT had, which has now forced IT into this new reckoning where they have to really find a way to continue to provide services to employees across a vast amount of devices and operating systems that are constantly expanding and are definitely not intercompatible with each other.
Right. Absolutely. Brian, you were going to jump in on that.
Well, right now this is where it's at. If you're not doing mobile, you're behind the eight ball, quite honestly. And what's really cool about mobile isn't just the devices that it's bringing, and the devices are cool. I mean, currently on my desk, if I look around, I think I have about 12 different phones. I don't have all my tablets out, but I have 4 or 5 tablets, just got the Kindle Fire. And they're really cool, but I think a big part of what mobile is mobile's actually allowing the enterprise to get back to basics, which is something that they haven't done in a long time. I mean, these days you get a laptop and you put SAP on it and it's got 300 functions. You get Word, you have, what do most people use? 10% of Word is the given thing of what's in the menus. And then you get a mobile device where they only give you 7 choices and people are being more productive on them.
Right.
And it really gives you the ability to reimagine how you approach applications. As Mr. Hare likes to say, craplications. And I tend to look at it that I tend to make a distinction between an app and an application. And I think that's really what's making it exciting, because we're giving people different ways to work. and they're starting to insist on using these devices to achieve these new ways of working.
Yeah. So you guys, I mean, you guys are both sort of living in the middle of IT, and Tal, you're obviously interacting with IT as a customer to you guys. I mean, 3 or 4 years ago, Nokia was a really viable company. RIM was a very viable company. Apple was getting sort of just dipping their toes in the water. Google didn't really exist in that space. I mean, is IT ready to deal with sort of ecosystem shifts that happen that fast? Or is this go back to that thinking you said of it, like they really got to go back to rethinking how they're going to deal with not only vendors, but also ecosystems? Because 3 or 4 years to have the 2 or 3 major players go away almost, and I don't want to declare anybody dead, but that's significant for those guys, isn't it?
I think, well, it depends how you look at it. I think you're going to start, I don't think enterprises are, other than Apple, are looking at partner makers. It becomes more about the OS, and obviously Apple owns iOS, but in the case of Android, that's owned by Google, but the devices come from pretty much everybody. And now you have Windows Mobile, which is following a similar model, and if Windows Mobile becomes the third OS, I think you're going to see a resurgence in Nokia, which is why I'm not ready to call them dead. But part of it is really about how they deal with the device, because it shouldn't really matter. And what I mean by that is, yes, there are certain things that you need in an OS that your device has to support. But once you get those basic things, it shouldn't really matter what device it is. You should be able to set up rules and everything else, but understand they're different from laptops and desktops.
Right, but how do you, but Brian, how do you, I'm just curious, how do you then account for, I mean, because this is the problem I have, because I'm all for that, this sort of thinking, right? And I think this is where I also butt heads with Christian, and that.
You butt heads with me too. You're bringing up CDI now.
I'm gonna bring up app virtualization, actually, not VDI, because I think that the biggest problem is, you see, you know, in the enterprise space, and this is where I keep butting heads with Pie in the Sky people, in the enterprise space, you have a lot of legacy apps that you need to continue supporting as an IT shop, and those legacy apps are not being ported over to mobile devices. They're not being ported to iOS. They're not being ported to to Android. They're things that exist as, you know, and they're not, you know, you can call them, they're applications that have to, that you need, that IT has to provide support for. And yes, you know, Mr. CIO or CEO brings an iPad to work, that's fine. And you just talked about, let's say an SAP workflow, which I like. So let's say he's got to do an SAP workflow, which is very, very simple. But the version of SAP that IT is running and is standardized on, for various reasons, whether it's compliance or change management, does not support the iPad client. Therefore, they have to be able to continue supporting CXO, Mr. CXO, on whatever device he wants to use, right? But still provide him with the application as it exists in a Windows desktop. And that's really the you know, when I talk about enterprise adoption of mobility, that's the biggest thing. I don't doubt that we're moving towards a world where applications are going to be provided as apps, as you said, like around, you know, specific workflows. But I'm saying that I think that migration is something that's going to happen, you know, over the good part of the next decade, not in the near term.
Okay, so yeah, here's where we're going to agree, and then we'll can talk about where we disagree. But there's absolutely a place for app virtualization, for bringing those app, for allowing legacy apps to be presented on a mobile device. That has to happen, and that's a good start. But truth of the matter is, your CEO, your CIO, et cetera, is going to use this app on an iPad or whatever, and very quickly is going to want to move away from it. Because in most cases, whether you're using RDP, whether you're using VDI, whether, you know, however you have that app appear, that legacy app appearing, it's not optimized for touch, which means it becomes very awkward to use it, very awkward to present things depending upon how the resolution's formatted. You get stuff where you can only see one cell or two cells on a spreadsheet. It's a great stopgap measure, and I happen to agree with you. I think there's a place for it, and there'll be a place for it for a long time. Before I was here, I was at a financial company out on Wall Street, and you have servers that you believe that have been running for 20 years now. More than that, because I'm sure they're still running as long as they can find the parts. So, yes, there's a place for that, but I think what you're going to start seeing is when the CIO uses that SAP app and doesn't like it or doesn't like the user interface, they're going to demand that there be some sort of upgrade and that people move along so that people can be productive.
But when they see the price tag for that upgrade, they're going to say, wait. Do you know what I mean? That's really what we see is, yes, I agree that that conversation happens. But usually the price tag for that upgrade is so significant that they have to really evaluate the value proposition of doing a forklift on the back end. And that's why, like, so I don't disagree with you. Again, I just think, like, where we're investing, right, where Citrix is investing is, yes, we're aware of the fact that some enterprises are reworking, their platforms, their IT platforms around mobility. But I also think that where you're seeing us invest, like, for example, in the, let's say, in the mobility pack that we've got coming out, which actually, and we've got an SDK actually that lets you completely reconfigure Microsoft applications for mobile devices. Like literally using, like, piecemeal them together and reformat them for a mobile device, and also our receiver product, which specifically acts as a middleman between the application and the platform, and lets you get closer to touch enabling those applications.
I actually use Citrix Receiver. I've used an iPad, and I've used it on multiple Android devices. And again, I think it has its place.
Yeah.
But I'm also going to say that I think that a crap application is a crap application, whether it's on a desktop or whether it's on a mobile device. The only difference is on a mobile device, it's that much crappier. I mean, I hate to get stuck on that, but
when you guys talk to those vendors, so you're talking to SAP or you're talking to Microsoft or Oracle or whoever kind of gets classified into that, legacy applications or more traditional business applications, I mean, do you see that as a priority for those guys, or do you see, in terms of priorities for them, is it, keep churning the existing application the way it is, make it more sort of mobile touch friendly, or is it, I'm going to try and push you into one of their hosted services, whether it's SAP hosted or Oracle hosted or whatever, where they're dealing and they're dealing with all of the upgrade, the cost, and they're trying to spread it out so that they can kind of kill two birds with one stone. What do you hear from those guys to try and address this type of challenge?
I think it depends who you talk to.
Right.
I think a lot of them are schizophrenic.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You have one side of the equation where they're saying, you know what, we really need to enable this, we really need to take, I'll pick on Microsoft as an example, and I'm not going to say this conversation happened.
I was going to do the same thing, actually. Go ahead.
You know, let's take Word and, put it into Office 365, make it available on the web. We'll come out with a mobile client, but for Windows Mobile only right now. And one of the issues that they're running into is they're opening up the space for others. And so, you have Docs2Go and a couple others that are out there. But you're starting to see other companies step in to fill that void and are willing to make mobile applications that start to work with, let's say, an older version of SAP, or will open a Word doc or an Excel spreadsheet. And they reformat it enough, but send it out in the format that it came with and allows it to interact. And I find it silly that they're giving these people this chance. And some of it is a matter of they're not agile enough to move. I guess a good example of that is if you think back, 10 years ago when AMD was kicking Intel's butt, and Intel, Ottolini really, had the cojones to say, stop. We're going to stop doing it this way. We're going to go to our Israel team that, you know, did the Celeron and have them redo the Xeon processors. And all of a sudden you start seeing 64-bit after they were denying it. I think some of these companies need to have the same sort of watershed moment. That being said, you're also seeing, you know, I'm in a regulated industry. So, yeah, you know, this is your cloud podcast. We're moving to cloud, a lot more private cloud than public cloud, but we see cloud coming. We're implementing. And we're starting to move that stuff out there and move people away from specific versions to hopefully, you know, utility. And that's where it starts to become interesting.
Yeah, I was going to pose a quick – before I go into my diatribe on this, I just wanted to pose a question to you two. What do you guys think is the number one published app using Citrix Zen app today?
Microsoft Word.
Yeah, I've got to think one of the Office applications.
Internet Explorer 6.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I could see that for the fact there are people who – and we were one of those people for a long time. That we had created applications that we optimized for IE6 that nobody wanted to upgrade.
Right.
So that doesn't surprise me.
And that's so to ask you to, and then I'm going to revert that to Brian's question, which is what are those vendors doing? Well, Microsoft, for example, in this particular scenario, and this is not picking on Microsoft, but their way of dealing with it is their end-of-lifing support for IE6. And they're forcing... people to start adopting newer technologies and start working around HTML5 and new standards. They're saying, look, this browser will no longer be supported. And that creates an interesting problem for people who have standardized on IE6 and are still developing around it. And that represents a significant part of the population. And I think that it's less about SAP and Oracle and Microsoft, and I think a lot of the applications that people use over IE6 are homebrewed applications, and that's really the problem. You know, there'll be proprietary apps. I mean, when I go into large Zen app or Zen desktop customers, you know, I always expect to see a subset of enterprise applications like SAP and Office and all that kind of stuff. But I always see that there's about 40% of homebrewed applications, and whether they're, you know, developed internally or developed by some developer that no longer exists, and they can't find support for it, and that work, you know, that application creates, you know, is responsible for a critical workflow, and as part of the business process, and getting off of that application is not an option, and finding another application that does the same function is a significant investment in both time, development, and testing. So when you have what you end up having is these sort of mixed bag environments, and we're seeing a lot of standardization around publishing a single browser, even for things like HTML5 applications. And I know that you're probably going to ask about HTML5 later, so I'll save that piece. I'll save that piece for later. But you know, my point here is that they're publishing that browser as a unified interface for that application. And that's really what Citrix Receiver is all about, right? Our philosophy is not – we believe that there's a lot of benefit to publishing applications around specific platforms. What we're saying is you can't count by using these sort of app, you know, apps or applets or whatever Brian calls them, you can't rely on that app to do the exact same thing on a different device. And that's where Receiver comes in, is it provides that ubiquitous access point that IT can stand behind and support, regardless of the device that the user brings into the office. And that's what I'm saying, is even if you say, okay, we've adopted Apple as a platform for the enterprise, well, that still doesn't solve the Android problem. Even if the Android problem, you know, may not exist yet, and even if Windows hasn't, you know, Windows as a mobile platform hasn't been adopted yet, it doesn't mean that it won't be. And then if you've standardized around a specific iOS app as a mechanism for a workflow, then you're trapped. Because how do you provide that same workflow to people who are not using an iOS-based device?
And Tal, I agree with you, I would, to a certain extent. I think once you've made that investment, and you said iOS, so we'll go with iOS app. Once you've made that investment in that new workflow, it becomes much easier to replicate that. That doesn't mean that the application is easy to build, but you've already proven something out and you've shown that a simpler workflow works, and you'll find that it becomes much easier to convince people to go that way. Again, that doesn't change the fact that I don't think Citrix in-app, app streaming, etc., is going away anytime soon.
No, but I don't think that's what you're saying.
But I also think that the companies that seem to be relying just on that, and there's some that think, okay, I'm allowing iOS or iPads in, and I installed Citrix Receiver, I'm done. They've lost the game. They decide not to play. And yeah, that's where it starts to become a very interesting thing.
Yeah, I think where you guys are kind of going with this, and again, you know, not trying to take a side. I think this is a good conversation. I think what Tal's ultimately trying to say is there's a set of customers, whether it's a huge set or a subset, that you know don't necessarily move as fast, and so there's technologies like some of the things Citrix have that allow them to sort of transition without either changing behaviors or changing the behind-the-scenes technology. And Brian, I think what you're saying is if you adopt the mindset that says, hey, let me show you sort of a better mousetrap, you may end up going faster. Is that fair? I think we're going to have sort of both types of worlds for a while. It's going to make an interesting environment for IT. You're going to have those IT organizations that sort of support the I'm not changing as fast, or for whatever that means, right? I can't find the developer, or I don't want to learn something new. And you're going to have some that you know, may either go faster or may get bypassed sort of by shadow IT that says, you know, my business unit's going to figure out a faster way to deal with this, and we'll go with the all-new solution because we don't know where to call that guy who was developing from Eastern Europe or something. I mean, are we going to be as bifurcated in IT as we do just in the platforms pretty quickly?
I don't know that you're... So let me take a step back and hit your first part of what you just said. I don't necessarily think that you have to move as quickly as you're saying. I think it's more a question of changing your mindset from my point of view.
Okay.
Because, again, there is a place for it. You know, there are things I use Citrix for. I try to avoid it when I can. It doesn't mean I can all the time. The things I don't expect to change, but if as a company you're not looking at mobile and ways to bring mobile in and what it does for you, so for example, you have a sales force and they still have a laptop which they have to open up, log in, VPN in, do a couple of things, fire up Citrix or whatever their workflow is, or just fire up the application. They've spent 15 minutes doing that, and then I have a sales force person that goes out with an iPad on 3G, they're already connected. They launched the app. They're sitting there. If they're in pharmaceuticals, they're showing them a presentation in 30 seconds. Who do you think the doctor's going to want to talk to? You know, there was a thing with I don't even remember who it was. I don't think it wasn't Coke. I think it was a beer distributor who was having trouble getting their beer in a bunch of locations and equipped their whole sales force with iPads and saw a 50% pickup because they were going in and they could get the 5 minutes of time. You know, they didn't have to say, hey, hang on, let me load it up, sit down at the bar, do all this. They could do it on the move. They could carry the device with them. And so from that perspective, it starts to become a mindset. It doesn't mean you have to be all there all at once, but if you're not already thinking that, to me, you're starting to lose the game if you don't get there soon.
Gotcha. And so you think there's room for people that, you know, I mean, there's always this utopia that people talk about where it's like, you know, one device to solve all our problems. I'm getting the sense you use that the beer company example. I mean, for those guys or for pharma sales guys or for anybody who's got sort of I need to do something distinctly well, there is space for sort of multiple devices that, you know, some of them are going to be distinct for a job versus others that might be general purpose, reading email, whatever it might be.
I think you can use a device for both. I think that it's just a matter of, I hear a lot of the time you have to develop for mobile first these days.
Okay.
And for smaller companies, I don't know that that is correct. But if you're looking at coming out with a new application, whatever it is, and you don't consider mobile, now you're stuck with something that's going to, you know, we already have things that grow anyway. I mean, Tal, you tell me, how much of your stuff is due to scope creep? I don't mean scope creep within Citrix, but you start looking at some of these homegrown applications, they came out for one function, all of a sudden they do 27.
Right. No, I don't disagree at all. I just think that, see, the thing that I'm trying to get across is that, you know, there's two things I'm trying to say. One is that we need to look at mobility on a case-by-case basis rather than saying that it's a religion. I think that, you know, switching your back-end infrastructure to support mobility is a significant investment, and you need to be able to justify it based on the usage. So you need to take a look at the workflows and what people are doing. Not every single, you know, a lot of these homegrown applications are used by a small subset of the employees inside of an enterprise. So they might, you know, investing in and updating that application for mobility, or that workflow for mobility, rather than just publishing it with something like Citrix Receiver. Is a cost benefit analysis that you need to make. The second thing that I wanted to say is that from our perspective, it's also about it's less about doing the stopgap stuff, and I think that a lot of people see it that way. But I think for us, it's more about centralized supportability, in the sense that you can call IT and IT knows exactly what's going on your screen, so they can support you. So when you start talking about your beer distributor use case and stuff like that, if they're comfortable using the application on their own and they don't need any support from IT, then that's fine. You know, I don't think that there's a problem there. The problems really start to arise when you're expecting IT to support you in your use of that application on that device, and that is the problem that we see a lot. And I think that's where you start seeing the need for a centralized mechanism for delivering those applications. Other than the app store per se, or because applications behave differently on different platforms, even if it's the same applications, yes, you've proven that you can make a mobile version of the workflow, but if it breaks on Android, who's going to support it? If you've only trained people to use it on iOS devices, I think that that's if you look at the sort of investments that we're making also through the Citrix Accelerator and at companies like, for example, like BlueStacks, right, that lets you run Android applications on Windows, and then you could literally publish those. We've got people who are publishing, Android applications on Windows through Receiver onto iPad devices so they can run Android on iPad. Stuff like that starts to get silly because, they've invested in a platform, and all of a sudden that platform is not, there's one guy in the company that doesn't want to use that platform, and he happens to be an influencer inside of the company, and IT has to support him. So I think supportability is a significant part of the value proposition that we need to think about when we talk about mobility, because IT is expected to be on the hook to support these applications. If they're not, then I completely agree with what Brian said. I think that you can sort of sever the relationship with IT. If you're comfortable using the application without having any support of IT, and the application does not contain any, and you're not doing anything that has the ability to compromise the security of the company. But so once you start messing with confidential data or doing things that you're expecting to be supported on by IT, then you need to think about a single platform for delivering those applications.
And Tal, where I'm going to disagree with you, and it's one of those places I wish the hair was actually in this one, I think that a lot of that needs to be addressed through a common API, and it shouldn't matter what the front end is. And as we start looking, we get back to the fact that this is a cloud podcast, and start looking at, you get past infrastructure as a service, and you start getting towards PaaS and SaaS and all that sort of stuff. If you have a common API, it shouldn't matter. Now, we're still going to, IT should still be involved. Mobility is not a reason to go around IT. And what, again, I think there's a huge place for Citrix to play here. And quite honestly,
We play on the cloud piece too, right? I mean, we're happy.
I'm with you. Well, that's why you got the hair with you for that. So
how does that come together? I mean, so the concept makes sense. But you've got Android, you've got iOS, you've got Windows Mobile, and maybe whatever else. Obviously, those guys have different priorities as to what they're doing. They're trying to create barriers of entry. How does that come together? I mean, is that, like you were talking about earlier, just a massive opportunity for somebody to come in as a startup and be essentially API middleware? Or how do you see that evolving? Is that where HTML5 fits in?
I'd actually say no.
Okay.
I think HTML... Before I talk about HTML5, let me go back to what you were originally asking, middleware, et cetera. And this goes to a conversation. I don't think, Tal, you were part of this, but we started with, you can't have a mobile application unless it runs on cloud. I disagree with that. I think cloud will become the back end for a lot of applications, but I think that in reality, when we talk about cloud, there are a couple pieces here. The data, does it matter whether it resides in a public cloud, a private cloud, on premises, on a single machine? You have your data, and, there's this blog post, which will finally hopefully get written on the airplane tomorrow, that I'm working on, that really all an app is a UI wrapper for data. It lets people do what they, lets people do the function that they want to do with that data, whether it's read the data, whether it is use a cloud backend to do some processing on that data and present the results. But it's a streamlined interface to handle that data. And if it presents a UX, it's a good UX, it's going to be successful. If you have a good user experience, you're going to see that. APIs have a huge place to play here. I would expect to see Citrix, and I think that what we'll see is they're going to keep their VDI stuff and they're going to keep their app virtualization stuff. But I also think you're going to see Citrix become and Tal, I don't know if you can or you want to speak about it, but I think you guys are going to become a big player in mobile outside of app virtualization and VDI, because I think you guys are going to start becoming one of those people that provides either some of those APIs or some of those to access those APIs, and it's going to give you guys a huge opportunity to grow. And getting back to your original supposition, Brian, I think that you're going to see a lot of people springing up to provide those APIs and coming in, and you're going to see people start saying, well, we'll be your consultant, so you can go SaaS with this and put a software as a service and put an app in front of it. I don't think they're all going to do it well, but I think there's a huge opportunity there.
So, yeah, did thanks for...
Brian, at least before I let Tal jump in?
Yeah, no, I think it's good. I think, trying to figure out, the hard thing I think for a lot of people is sort of dissecting how much of these ecosystems are tied together and how much of them are sort of flexible, right? So I think what you were trying to do there is dissect, where does a device stop and start? Where does an app or an application stop and start? Where does the data sort of reside in this, and where are there going to be opportunities where you can say, look, my main goal, like you were saying, is to get to the data and manipulate it in some way, right? Whatever that might be, and then the opportunity or the way to look at it is, am I addressing that application piece of it, whether it's an API or it's an actual application. I think it's good. I think it's figuring out, okay, how are we going to get from what we talked about for, say, the first 10, 15 minutes, which was, it's a transition like every other transition. You're going to have legacy stuff. You're going to have some people that want to change, some people that don't want to change, and there's technologies to help deal with that. The question becomes is, how do you make it become maybe not more completely ubiquitous, but become in a way where you don't have to be thinking, oh, this is Android or Android version, whatever, or iOS version, whatever.
Right.
It's, get back to sort of the browser mentality. Oh, that's a bad analogy, but sort of that browser of like, I go to ESPN.com and I get all the data. I didn't have to think, well, it was Firefox or it was, Chrome or whatever it was.
Right. And yeah, so that, I think that's what Brian actually was teeing me up for, in the sense like, so I think that what, from our perspective, and that's why I said that was number two, because that's really what I wanted to start talking about, is for us, it's about that. It's not, we recognize that the majority of applications, the move is to move is away from kind of legacy Windows applications into more specific workflows like apps, I guess Brian calls them. We call them applets. We recognize that. I think that from our perspective, that's all goodness. But what's important is, again, supportability, right? Is how do you as IT maintain the ability to support end users who are using those applications on a day-to-day basis? And for us, it's about building an infrastructure that people can use, letting people build infrastructures, rather, that they can use to create these sort of API pools. And that's the whole idea of what we're doing with cloud.com is letting people, making it easier for people to sort of onboard applications and develop sort of paths on top of to develop their own paths rather than and make things portable between things like AWS and Rackspace and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's the idea of Cloud Stack, right?
Yep.
But I think that even internally, if you look at what we're doing to sort of be champions of that is, I don't know if you guys are aware, but we recently totally opened up the kimono for the GoToMeeting products, right? So you could basically build your own GoToMeeting application using our APIs.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't heard that.
And that's really what we're trying to sort of drive that thought leadership across. Is like, look, we know what our secret sauce is, right? We know what our value proposition is. This app lets you have, have a meeting over the web, and lots of people want to consume that meeting a different way. Some people want to use things like, HD faces for video conferencing. Some people want to be able to see who else is on the call. Some people don't. Some people want to utilize the chat interface. Some people don't. We saw all the change management requests that were coming from customers, and we realized it was easier for us to let them build their own applications on top of our APIs than create a GoToMeeting that makes everybody happy.
Yeah, I think that's probably smart. That's the that's the trade-off always for any product management team is you dealing with a million requests, and then how do you keep up with them, but at the same time have enough customers that actually can develop that as opposed to just ask for it. But no, I think that's probably a very good idea.
And so that's the sort of thought leadership we're trying to drive, and that's exactly what our goal is, right? Is to enable IT to so that ubiquity becomes, IT. IT builds the application that then gets consumed by the end users. And so IT is able to support the application because they built it according to their specs, rather than rely on a developer to create the appropriate cross-platform solution for the workflow, for the very specific workflows that they're trying to get done through these apps. And I believe that's the direction that things are moving in, and that's where we're trying to drive folks. So we're kind of looking at it from both perspectives, right? So from the legacy perspective, it's, hey, let's give you a ubiquitous client that makes it as easy as possible to consume legacy applications on mobile devices. On the mobility front, we're saying, look, rather than try to figure out, who the right vendor is to deal with for building, for building workflows that do the sort of stuff that we're used to doing in the enterprise, let's sort of create a philosophy that encourages people to open up the kimono, publish their APIs, and focus on licensing those rather than having everybody consume the UI, which may not be something relevant to the end users. And I think that's our perspective.
And by the way, that's the right way to handle it, because if you open up the kimono, give your APIs out, and figure out how to license them, you're making money, and that's where those, you talked about those huge opportunities, Brian. That's where you start to see some of those opportunities come up for these other companies, because they start to do it well, and everybody wins. Citrix wins, GoToMeeting wins, whoever the company that created the application wins.
Yep.
It becomes very easy to monetize.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. You guys keep the expertise in running the back end of it and all of those services and let people get creative. So I'm going to throw out two last questions to you guys, and you know, either one of you can jump on this. So we've talked a bunch about sort of, you know, how to deal with all this. What's the? I'll end with one sort of tough question, and then one sort of an upbeat prognostication question. So what's the most broken concept these days around mobile? Is it legacy apps, or is it things like security? You know, how to keep track of where devices are and don't lose stuff? Is it incompatibility of app stores? What's the most broken thing that either is an opportunity for people or just avoid like the plague right now because it really is, you know, a mess?
Brian, you go first.
Oh, geez. That means you're still thinking.
No, I have my go-to answer, but I think yours is going to be more interesting.
I think that, you know, I can't say that there's one thing that's more broken than the rest. I hate to say that. You know, in some cases you have fragmentation. I think that Google's finally making a good shot at fixing some of that. I'm interested to see how it works. It's hard to see that happening with the number of manufacturers that they have.
Right.
You know, one of the major differences you have between all the OEM partners for Android versus, let's say, iOS is Apple will certainly make sure that their phones are good for at least 2 years, if not longer. I buy a phone today, I may still be on Froyo or something else, although most of them are on Gingerbread. I have no idea whether I'm getting ice cream sandwich, which is what comes out this month, or actually I should say December. I keep thinking it's December already. So that becomes an issue because there's security pieces and everything that are in there. But if we're looking at it from an enterprise perspective, I think one of the most broken concepts is that we have to manage our mobile devices the same way we manage our laptops and desktops. And if you get caught up in that, you're gonna lose the plot fairly quickly because people, you know, you have your phone with you all the time.
Right.
You know, it's much easier to leave your laptop in the scanner at the airport than to walk out with your phone. Not to say that people don't do that with their phone. But you tend to notice that your phone's gone rather quickly.
Right.
You tend to take better care of it. It doesn't mean that people don't lose them, they don't get stolen, everything else. And there are things to consider. But people want to lock down the device, and then you have some people call it consumerization of IT. I like to say ITization of the consumer. They realize that they want their email and they want their device to work. And they're willing to take some of the rules. But if you make the rules so tough, and you see this in laptops, if you put a proxy server that you can't get anything in, you put encryption, you put antivirus, you put all these things on a laptop, and all of a sudden your laptop runs dog slow. There's not much you can do about it. If you start doing that on mobile, people are going to find ways to get around that. And once that happens, that becomes the real danger. So you have to realize that it's a different type of device. I like to say that, and the opinion that I've gotten, I think that Christian would agree with me if he were on here, is that it's not really device management anymore, it's application management. And it's figuring out how to manage the applications, because if the applications are what is wrapping that corporate data, then that's what you need to manage.
Okay.
And then you don't care about the rest of the phone. You know, you want to be on Facebook on the phone, so what? You want to be on this on the phone? Who cares? As long as I've protected that app, I'm okay.
Tal, what about you?
Yeah, so I actually largely agree with what Brian said, but I think that the mechanism for abstracting the piece that needs to be controlled and managed is a significant missing mechanism today, and I think that's probably the big, you know, if you ask me what the biggest opportunity mobility was, enterprise mobility was, it would be that. It's abstracting the things that are valuable away from the application, giving IT control of those, but letting people continue using the applications without worry. So separating the UI from the sensitive piece, right? And finding a way to abstract that in a way that allows people to continue using the application in a holistic way. Okay. What's
Tal?
Yeah.
I apologize for interrupting, but when you say abstracting the UI from the sensitive, could you actually go into that a little more? So I want to make sure I understand what you're saying.
So what I mean by that is, you know, the UI is, you know, in a lot of ways, what creates the applet. It's a way for the user interface to interface with the back end and get something done, right? So if we think about it in the way apps are actually constructed, is you've got this layer cake of, you've got data, logic, and then interface, right? Interface to that logic. Sometimes the data is absolutely the most valuable component of it, but sometimes the logic itself has something to do with, you know, is the user trying to write something to a device? Is the user accessing this application from an authorized location or device? That kind of stuff. Sometimes that needs to be abstracted as well. So my point is, there isn't a mechanism today that allows for the abstraction of those three layers, like you do it with web. Like, so with web, you've got your app server and your database, you know, your backend database server, and then you've got the browser, which, you know, interacts with HTML, and then you've got a whole set of policies that tell the browser, that basically can control whether the browser can access pieces of the application, and then beyond that, whether that application can access pieces of the database, right? That abstraction today doesn't exist in the app world.
Okay.
And I think that's what's missing. But so I think that's the number one thing that's broken. I think that there's a huge, and this is my main beef also with HTML5, is there's a huge disparity in platforms, and so I think it's very, very hard today to create an application that behaves ubiquitously across all platforms. And this is why I hate people talking about HTML5, because HTML5 has four primary dominant platforms, which are, you know, Presto, WebKit, Trident, and whatever Mozilla uses.
Don't worry about it.
Gecko. And then even in WebKit, you've got things like, so for example, you look at WebKit, right? Chrome is based on WebKit. Shouldn't it be my assumption that anything that runs on Chrome should run on Safari because they're both running on WebKit? No, it should be my assumption, but that's not the case, because, you know, everybody wants you to use their browser. So Chrome has got a different set of extensions than Safari. So it's impossible to write a perfect HTML5 app, because you have to write it around a specific platform, and more beyond that, a specific platform and a specific browser. And the same thing is happening with the applications. You look at, you know, the thing that's the trigger of the application, the discussion about Kindle Fire, is that not all Android apps render appropriately inside of Kindle Fire. You basically have to rewrite your application to render appropriately inside of Amazon's Android device. And so that is a huge thing that's broken. It makes, if you think about IT having to support this sort of plethora of devices, you end up having an unsupportable model. So you need to be able to find a way to deliver these workflows in a ubiquitous manner. And if that doesn't exist yet, then you need to figure out what's the best way for you to provide a stopgap while maintaining supportability to your end users, because you know they're going to end up bringing in their own devices and they're going to expect to be supported on it. So rather than letting these things get out of your your control, you as the IT person, you know, unfortunately hold the weight of what is the solution. So we've got, you know, that's what we're focusing on at Citrix, is you could either focus on building your own applications using APIs if those are available to you, or if the application lives on Windows today, we've got the ability for you to deliver it ubiquitously to any platform using Receiver. It's not perfect, but it's better than the alternative.
All right, real quick, let's end on an upbeat. 30 seconds or less. Coolest thing you guys are seeing right now, or the thing that's most intriguing to you, or just sort of a great mobile 2012 prediction.
Al gets to go first this one.
Okay. I think, you know, one of the biggest things that people are talking about is, you know, now that we've got sort of three devices, a phone, a tablet, and a laptop, I think people are saying, okay, well, I'm gonna have fewer devices because I'm gonna have a single device that's gonna be able to do all of those things. My prediction is that it's actually going to be the opposite, and we're going to see an increasing creep of devices that are purpose built. Just like we're seeing these sort of applets or apps that are built around workflows, you're going to see devices that are built around workflows to run specific applications. And I think device creep is going to increase, not decrease.
Okay. Brian Katz?
Okay. I can see some of that. I think some of the interesting things you're starting to see is Android's finally growing up. I think ice cream sandwich looks terrific. I can't wait for my device next week. I think that you're actually seeing Windows Phone is making huge strides, and I would be hesitant to write them off now, but I think that the best thing I think see about Windows Phone is people are actually starting to reimagine the mobile OS. You know, quite honestly, you can say what you want, copying, not copying, but Android in the beginning was just sort of a knockoff of iOS, and now it's grown up. And it's got its own features and functionalities, which are terrific. And I think that what we're going to start seeing for the next year is a lot of stuff where it really truly becomes mobile first. And you're going to start seeing more people in the enterprise with these devices who aren't going to have laptops anymore. Or if they have laptops, barely use them. You know, when you go to a meeting these days, I either bring my AirBook because it's either going to be an Ultrabook or it's going to be an iPad or tablet, I should say. I shouldn't say iPad, although okay. They have the market.
Very cool. Well, it sounds like I may have to create a mobile cast podcast to keep up with all this stuff. So, guys, for Brian and for Tal, thank you very much for the time this morning, the conversation. We're out of time for this week. You can follow us on Twitter at thecloudcastnet or reach us at thecloudcast.net on the web. You'll find links to the show in show notes, and you can leave us a comment or send us an email or details on how to stream us on Stitcher. Aaron will be back next week, so thanks, everybody, for listening.